Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Roger Bennett, an American fiasco. It's not the only podcast that I host, because along with my great friend, Michael Davis, a fellow bald, I host a show called Men in Blazers. It's also about soccer. In fact, our unofficial slogan is Soccer, America's sport of the future, as it has been since 1972. We came out with that slogan in one of the very first podcasts that we broadcast, really based on the hilarious expectation that soccer is forever tomorrow's sport in America, forever the sport of the future, always predicted, despite its history of boom and bust, to be the great overnight sensation that's going to sweep the country. And while everybody is waiting for that overnight sensation, slowly, steadily, while no one was watching, soccer has grown to become a major, major sport with a huge demographic following every single hero, villain, ill-judged haircut and neck tattoo. When I first came here in the 1990s, Americans were not just inured to soccer's charms, they actively, passionately, continuously loved to hate on it. And I was always fascinated by that hate, its contours, its motivations. To me, to be candid, they always almost protest of too much. And so for this episode, if you'll allow me, we're going to take a journey into the hate. Hit pause for a second on the story of the 1998 American team and talk with a remarkable 2018 American, Dan Katz, aka Big Cat, a gent with a huge megaphone in the sports world. He co-hosts the podcast Pardon My Take, which is a phenomenon, a juggernaut, and part of the fast-growing online empire, Barstool Sports.
Well, I am the one you need to convert. Like, I am the if people can follow my lead, where it's almost, I have a little side piece, and it's soccer.
Yeah.
And I never will get married to soccer, but I'll flirt with it and maybe go out to drinks with it every now and then. Maybe when everyone's away, you'll pop on a little game, a little footy match, and cheat on the real sports.
You've heard Big Cat in our first episode, but I really believe it's worth hearing the rest of our conversation, because Big Cat does what Big Cat does. He pushes buttons, he pushes me, and I found he really illuminates the issue in a way only he can. So let's do it. This is American Fiasco.
This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, the furor on college campuses over the war in Gaza.
Students have tried to have dialogue over and negotiate differences in how they see the world, even as they respond to tragedies and crimes overseas.
Students and faculty from Harvard University on the New Yorker Radio Hour from WNYC Studios. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I have an idea of why you invited me as well that I think will help the discussion.
Go on.
I think I'm the epitome of, like, the American sports fan.
You are.
I think the reason why you invited me on here is because I am the bridge from the truly Neanderthal American fan who says soccer is a sport that doesn't even deserve a second of our time, and the guy who decides that he's a diehard Manchester United fan and goes to the bar at 8 a.m., even though he grew up in Long Island. So, like, I am the bridge between those two because I actually do enjoy soccer, but I also enjoy making fun of soccer. So it's like I am torn right down the middle, and I understand the game a little bit more than I did, and I like the game, and I like watching the game, but I still like to make my jokes because at the end of the day, football is far superior, basketball is far superior, baseball is far superior.
Big Cat, just so I understand... I love this. You are the symbol. You are the.
I am.
I am the nation.
I am
the nation.
One you
is
need.
Me. I want to go back in time with you to young Cat.
Okay.
To little Cat.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember Little Cat?
Yeah, barely.
Can you put yourself back in touch with Little Cat?
Yes, barely.
To kick this off, just tell me your name and where you grew up.
Okay, so my name's Dan Katz. I grew up on the East Coast, but my family is from Chicago, and Chicago is home.
You did grow up on the East Coast?
Yeah. I told you that before.
No!
Yeah.
Yes. Where on the East Coast?
Yeah, outside Boston. I've told you that.
Where?
Newton, I've told you this. So, North.
Newton. See, we're in Newton North. Yeah. Were there any soccer fans in your school, Newton Mass,
yep,
when you were a kid?
Yeah, of course. Soccer's a popular youth sport. It has been for a long time. I don't know, I can't speak to the 80s and the 70s, but in the 90s, it definitely was a popular youth sport. And the problem is, it always competes with football. So you play soccer in the fall, and it competes with football. When there's multiple sports and you can play a bunch of different sports, why would you play soccer? The sport no one really cares about. I just wasn't a big soccer guy, like, growing up. I don't... soccer really came to me late.
So what status did the soccer lover have in Newton North?
Well, it wasn't all the way down, but there's definitely always been a feeling that soccer fans are a little... They're definitely lower than everyone else. Lower than basketball or football or baseball. There's definitely that feel and that vibe that has always been around in America.
So did that old phrase, those who can do and those who can't become a teacher, was it like, if you can play, if QB1, you play that sport, and if you can't, you play lacrosse, and if you can't, and then you keep you can'ting, then you can be the captain of the soccer team.
By the time I was, 12 to 15 years old, we had already had the 94 World Cup. We had already had kind of that big push. So soccer was a little bit more accepted. There was never really a kind of a feeling of a subculture or anything. It was just...
The RC Cola.
Yeah, exactly. It's the off-brand sport.
Jack Kemp, former Great Buffalo Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Average Buffalo Bill. Now, he became a congressman. In 1983, when US soccer was trying to lure the World Cup to America, something motivated him to run onto the floor of Congress, your governing body, a place of sense and rationality.
Oh, yes.
And he said, a distinction should be made that football is democratic capitalism, whereas soccer is a European socialist sport.
Mm.
Why is it the root of that? Like, why would it? It's almost like they protest of too much, Big Cap.
Yeah, I would think that's fair, but it's like, during the Cold War, and you don't want to let culture from outside come into America. There's a fear out there.
Of what?
There's a fear of whatever it is that you guys love to do across the pond. You know, it's like, that's not us. We're not soccer. I mean, if all these European countries love soccer, we don't want that. Just keep that away. We like our cold beers. We like our, hard-hitting football.
But there's also something about having Belgians, Chileans, and God forbid, Frenchmen run rings around America.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also, America in the 90s, its self-image, doesn't do number two in the world.
Yes. Yes. And to be totally honest, and this is probably revealing a little bit of our own, insecurities.
Let's go there.
Yeah. Our own insecurities as Americans. We suck at it. So I don't really want to watch a sport we suck at.
That's an American sentiment.
It's an American feeling, but I don't think that that's ever going to go away because we want to be the best. I think the best way to describe it is every kid probably had the same exact experience growing up. When you have video games, I don't know how big video games are in England. I don't know, but sports
they're
video
games.
They're
between enormous and the biggest.
Okay. All right. So, but Madden, right? Playing Madden. What would you do as a kid when you're playing Madden? You would go in and you would make the team so that all of your guys are 99 overall. And you would see how bad you could beat the other team. And that's like a feeling that you just have. And that's the dream team come to life. It's basically like screwing with a video game and saying, what if we made every single player on this team the best possible player and then put them out there and see what they could do to everyone else? Watching that's fascinating. How can you say that's not fascinating?
Can you describe that? What's that like to... I've never understood watching the Dream Team. I've never understood the pleasure of watching the Dream Team.
Oh, well, I mean, the pleasure of watching the Dream Team is you get the best... it would be like putting Messi and Ronaldo and all these guys all on the same team, but they happen to also be from the same country. It is a historical thing to watch all these guys play together. And if you kind of follow any... I was only 9 years old, but... If you watch any of the stuff, the documentaries that have come out, the practices that the Dream Team had, where the team is playing itself, that's stuff that you can talk about forever. When you have Michael Jordan playing against Magic Johnson and Larry Bird playing against Charles Barkley, and then going out and just dominating everyone, that's the most American thing in the world.
So Americans like total destruction.
Yes.
But you also like the Miracle on Ice.
Yes. Well, that's Cold War too, right? So, I mean, that also had, you know, political implications. But yeah, we like to be underdogs that can win, underdogs that can lose. No one likes that. That's not fun, right? So basically, we've gotten to this whole entire conversation has been that if America can't win, that we don't want to play. And that sounds so spoiled. But you know what? I'm going to stand up for that because I think that that's the right mindset.
I came to America in the 90s and I was really struck by how football, soccer, it was barely on the nation's radar back then. Do you remember this time?
Barely. The 1994 World Cup was the first time I think anyone had said the word soccer, if you look back. And we probably pronounced it incorrectly. It couldn't be formed on our tongues.
Was it like GIF? Like
yeah.
The word GIF?
Right, exactly. GIF, GIF.
And you pronounce it soccer.
Yeah, or, soccer. Or, you got to really lean into the R.
So it ranked below the NFL. Would you say I'm trying to position it?
I'd say it ranked below the NFL. I'd say it ranked below all college sports. Every sport you could imagine.
Would it be fair to say it came somewhere in between like ultimate frisbee, devil sticks, and competitive eating?
Yeah, it was probably right ahead of devil sticks, right below lacrosse.
And soon, devil sticks fans, we took you down.
I remember opening Sports Illustrated for Kids and seeing those guys with the crazy hair. And be like, what's going on here? And I was intrigued by it. So those guys, Tony Meola, it was Alexi Lalas and Kobe Jones, right? Is that Kobe Jones? Am I saying it right? Tab Ramos. I don't know who else I can come up. I mean, Winalda. I don't know who else I can come up with off the top of my head.
Were you like, when you saw the ginge?
Yeah.
The dreadlocks. And the
dreadlocks.
And the mullet.
Right.
Were you like, that's the future?
Yeah,
or
that's
you
the
like,
future.
Or were you just like, I'm at a circus. That's a freak show. Interesting. Moving on.
It was interesting and you wanted to watch more. But yeah, at no point did I think it was going to be the future.
Explain that to me.
I can easily explain it to you.
I'm really going
yes,
for it.
Yes, easily. You make the joke on your show all the time. The sport of the future. I don't want to be told what the sport of the future is. You see it now with esports. People say esports is about to take over. There's not going to be sports in 20 years. It's just going to be all people playing video games and us watching it. Don't tell me what I'm going to like in 20 years. Don't tell me what is the sport of the future, why soccer is so beautiful. If it's so great, I'll watch it. But don't tell me that it's going to take over the world and give me all these stories about how soccer, everyone's playing soccer and football's dying and baseball's dying. I don't want to hear that. Don't tell me that soccer is going to be the sport of the future. Don't tell me that it's going to be the thing that the global game. It's that, why do so many people watch it? Why do Americans not? I don't want to hear it. I love what I love. So don't try to tell me what I need to watch.
Don't take away my meat and potatoes.
Yeah. We can't be told what to do. So I think, and there's obviously been a push and a PR campaign of the sport of the future and all this stuff. And it has to be natural. You can't push that on people. You can't shove it down people's throats. They have to naturally come. I naturally came to loving soccer. And that happened through its own way. You know, it happened through betting on World Cup in 2014 and having a ton of goals. It was a happenstance where I love to bet overs. There were a ton of overs at the beginning of the game. And I said, hey, I'll give this soccer thing a try. And if we go back to the sport of the future talk, it's just the process feels so, so long and labored. And every year I have friends that are diehard soccer fans. And every year they tell me, well, this is the best U.S. team. And we beat some South American team in a friendly.
We beat Antigua and Barbuda.
Yeah.
At
and
the same time.
I have a running joke on Twitter that this is the game that's going to make soccer big in America. So when they draw Portugal in the World Cup, this is the game that will flip it for everyone, where everyone will say, aha, we're finally good at soccer. Obviously, that's never going to happen, but that's what it feels like. Soccer fans always saying, this is the most important. We beat Mexico, dos a cero, in Columbus, Ohio. This is the game that's going to make soccer big in America. Probably not. So stop telling us that.
But
it's a hype. The hype gets too much. Just constantly saying that this is the tipping point. At some point, it's the boy who cried wolf. If soccer is going to be the biggest sport and this is the tipping point for it to be the biggest, when is it going to happen? Because we've been hearing it for 20 years now. And again, I love soccer.
Carnegie Hall is one of the most famous concert venues in the world.
The first time I walked on the stage, I felt like my feet were moving, but they were not touching the floor.
Join us for If This Hall Could Talk, a new podcast that explores the history of this iconic landmark through the unique items in its archives. I'm your host, Jessica Vosk, and together we'll explore how the past shaped the culture we live in today. Listen to If This Hall Could Talk wherever you get podcasts.
Before we jump back in this conversation, Big Cat and I talk about whether America can win the World Cup. And some of you might start yelling at your pod machines right now, but the US women's team, they've won three bloody World Cups, produced a litany of the greatest players to ever take the field, from Mia Hamm to Julie Foudy and Carly Lloyd. And next summer, they'll defend the Women's World Cup in France. But Big Cat and I are talking about American men losing because, well, American fiasco. It's about the US men's national team and their self-destruction in 1998. They didn't deserve, nor did they receive a Wheaties box. Back to our conversation. The Americans, they don't just not care about soccer. Here's what I want to get to, ooh, Big Cat. Mm. They don't just not care about it. Back then, especially in the 90s, they actively seem to hate it.
Yes. Yes.
What? Why is it?
We couldn't figure out. So you're saying you don't use your hands? And it was that kind of feeling. Like, what is this sport where everyone runs around with little shin pads on?
Just what I'm trying to understand. Why?
So I feel like the answer that always is given is the lack of scoring. And it's a little bit of a cop-out, but I think there is some truth to it because you can watch a soccer game forever and no one will score. And it's painful to watch. And you say, why are there not goals? America needs scoring. Chicks dig the long ball. That's the saying in baseball. You know, we want scoring. We want big plays. We want big hits. We're Americans. But I also think it's just a lack of understanding how the game works and how to watch the game properly. And when you don't really understand the nuances, it's almost like having someone from England watch a baseball game and not understanding what kind of pitch you're going to throw in an 0-2 count, how you're going to want to try to make the batter chase.
You're going to bean him.
Right. You know, but you know what I mean? There's intricacies to a game that if you don't fully understand it, you kind of just, you're like, I don't really want to watch this.
Big Cat, the rest of the world lives for this game.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But I don't know what you guys see in it.
But not America.
There's no one can tackle. These tackles, if you slide into someone, you get kicked out of the game.
So a lack of violence.
Yeah, a little bit of a lack of violence, a little bit. And one thing we haven't really touched on is the fact that you can tie in soccer, which is the most un-American thing in the world. The most un-American thing, the fact that you can tie in soccer.
What's a tie team?
A tie is brutal. A tie, the fact that you can tie after playing an entire game makes no sense. And no other sport in America, the only other sport that has it is football. And that's after an overtime. And if you look, it happens maybe once every 3 years or so. So a tie in football becomes almost a celebration. I root for ties in football because it's funny. Because it's basically saying, how the heck could you guys not figure out a winner here? It's a joke that you played football for 4 hours and couldn't figure out a winner.
So it seems like a weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have a winner.
But also, it's not the process that you appreciate ultimately. The outcome factors in.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to win. Part of the reason it's boring is because people don't really understand it. And you don't understand the beauty in a build-up to a goal. For the longest time, I didn't understand that. So then when you start watching the superior products and you start to understand the game and the nuances and the fact that controlling the ball in the midfield and passing it back and forth is not just laziness, they're actually building to something, it becomes a lot more enjoyable to watch.
But what you're saying is, it's a very odd sport in that the wins and losses are not just wins and losses.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, they're playing for the future of the status of the sport in your eyes. Just surmise for me so I understand. American sports, the values that they hold, you've named one. You like scoring.
Scoring.
You like violence.
Winning. That's the big one. Winning. We need to be the best. Because when I'm watching MLS or I'm watching whatever it is, whatever league you want to watch, pick it. America's not the best. Maybe that's the key.
But without the American winning, it's like sex without an orgasm.
Yes, exactly. You're edging. You're constantly edging. So maybe we need to get FIFA to let us... Well, no, FIFA's actually never done anything corrupt, so they won't... No way they could rig that. We'll have to find an organization, a worldwide soccer organization that's that can be bought.
That would be willing to give us a footballing orgasm nationally.
Yes, exactly.
Collectively.
Tell me when we find that.
So essentially, it's boring. But part of the reason it's boring is because it doesn't end in American victory. I mean, that's it. There is something that affronts the American sporting sensibility about being mediocre.
Right. It's disgusting. I don't want to watch mediocre. I mean, we don't spend time watching minor leagues or second level. We want to watch the best. When we are not the best, we have very little interest in it. And I'll be honest with you, it's not just the 90s. It's still today. And it's still a feeling of, and I know this sounds, I'm putting my hand up saying it is very insecure, very immature to say if we're not the best, we don't want to play this game. And I understand the ugly American thing, but that's fine. That's fine. As long as you own it, I think if I sit here and tell you, Roger, if I can't win, I'm not playing, I think, you know, you have to at least respect that I'm being open about it. I'm not really a sore sport if I tell you I'm a sore sport beforehand.
Flip the game board,
Ava. Yeah, I don't care. Right.
So until they win, that's what it's going to take. America winning.
Yeah, it's America has to either win or there needs to be a superstar, dynamic, charismatic American soccer player who can captivate the world, and then I think we'd buy in. If we had the LeBron James, if we had the, you know, Tom Brady, if we had that guy who was that good at soccer and could compete on a world stage and he was American, I think then you would have the change. And I know you're going to say the golden boy, Pulisic, but I mean, he plays midfield, right? You need the goal scorer.
Is it fair to say the last great measure of American exceptionalism is just hating on soccer?
Ooh. Yes, it definitely feels like hating on soccer makes you more of an American in some respects. It's almost in my DNA as an American to hate on soccer, right?
Big Cat, you put a man on the moon.
Yeah.
You put a Starbucks on every corner.
We could win a World Cup.
Yes.
I don't think so, though. I mean, if the U.S. could be good, I would be a lot more, I would have a lot less hate in my heart. That absolutely is true. So just be good and stop saying you're going to be good and stop saying in some point, you know, we got to change the system. We got to get the youth development. I'm sick of hearing about youth development and these soccer camps and all these things. Just be good. Just figure out a way to be good.
You win. America wins.
Yeah.
You win two ways. You win with the dream team.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Barkley, yeah, elbowing an Angolan center in the head.
Yep.
You win dominance, virility, emasculating the opposition.
Yep.
Grit.
Grit. Well, I mean, the soccer is the least gritty sport. You have orange slices and Oreos at halftime. So how could you be gritty when you do that? You're literally playing for the cookies.
And by the way,
you realize that that is the best definition of soccer in America, that to play soccer in America as a kid, they had to bribe you with cookies. They said, if you play this sport, if you put on these silly shin guards and run around and kick this ball for, you know, 60 minutes, we will give you some Oreos at the end. That's really, it sums it all up. You had to bribe us.
That is the way that America can become better at football. More Oreos.
Yes, exactly.
I think we've just cracked it. Huge thanks to you, Dan Katz. You can follow him on Twitter at Barstool Big Cat. Listen to him on a daily basis on the podcast, Pardon My Take. Oreos, I know you're listening. Hook Big Cat up with the double stuff endorsement already, will ya? And in the meantime, our next episode of American Fiasco will pick up the story of the 1998 men's national team.
American Fiasco is a production of WNYC Studios. Our team includes Joel Meyer, Emily Botine, Paula Schumann, Derek John, Starley Kine, Keegan Zema, Ernie Introdat, Eliza Lambert, Jameson York, Daniel Guimet, Matt Boynton, Jonathan Williamson, Brad Feldman, B. Aldrich, Jeremy Bloom, Isaac Jones, and Sarah Sandbach. Joe Plourd is our technical director. Hannes Brown composed our original music. Our theme music is by Big Red Machine, the collaboration between Aaron Desner of The National and Justin Vernon of Bon Iver. For more about this story, including a timeline and more, go to fiascopodcast.com.